This is MMA Torch editor Wade Keller with an introduction to this week's episode 3 of MMA Torch Podcast. Today we've got two segments, one with main MMA Torch Podcast host Sean Ennis, who is talking solo this week about all the current events in the MMA world, including obviously some talk about next week's UFC event and the Ultimate Fighter. And then after that, we go to an excerpt of my discussion with Torch columnist Bruce Mitchell about the De La Hoya Mayweather fight, the buy rate for it, its ramifications on the UFC industry, and a couple other MMA topics. That's an excerpt of actually last week's Bruce Mitchell audio show from the PW Torch website, where we do talk about MMA periodically. So without further ado, let's go to Sean Ennis with this week's solo effort covering the week in MMA.
Hello everyone, this is Sean Ennis with the MMA Torchcast for Friday, May 18th, 2007. I'm by myself this week, but that's alright. I had a few things planned for this week, but none of them ended up panning out. But that's okay. We've got a lot coming up here on MMATorch.com. A couple of the biggest months, or at least I should say the biggest month and a half, possibly in MMA history, with all these events coming up, and a lot of discussion points, actually, from some of the smaller events as well. Let's just get right to it. Well, first of all, let me just say this. Since this is the show that I am hosting, I will give you the Philadelphia Sports Update for the week. The Phillies just took 3 out of 4 from the formerly best record in baseball, having Milwaukee Brewers, bringing the Phillies within one game of 500 and a lowly 6.5 games out of first place. But that's just how it goes with the Phils sometimes. Actually, I should say every year. April is bad. May is pretty good. Then it's kind of so-so until the All-Star break. They're great coming out of the All-Star break, and then they suck heading into the playoff stretch. And that is your Philadelphia Sports Update for this week. Let's move on to MMA. Let's talk a little Ultimate Fighter. Last night we had another episode with two fights, which is always a good thing. First fight, we had Gray Maynard taking on Wayne Weems, and we had BJ Penn, who said that Gray should not underestimate Weems, followed by saying that he would walk right through him, which turned out to be prophetic. But actually, I guess there was a little bit something beforehand with Andy Wang being dismissed from BJ Penn's team. We saw that Dana White pulled BJ into the office and took a little shot at Ken Shamrock, saying, "You don't want to come out on the show like Ken Shamrock," which I thought was interesting, with how Shamrock ended up looking on that show. I don't think BJ has looked the same way. I think it's just been mismatches. You know, Pulver's been able to pick the fights, and the loss of Rudiger did nothing for him. I mean, it ended up being, after this episode, it ended up being 5-3 in favor of Pulver. If you ask me, if Rudiger was still there, they'd have split. You know, Rudiger would have just mauled Corey Hill. So take that for what it's worth, which is not too much, but that's okay. We've got Andy Wang, who mentioned that he was like a Ronin, which is the word of the week. It's also what I named my son last week. I can't remember the last time I heard that word on TV, and of course the week after I named my son Ronin. Here's Andy Wang talking about being a Ronin. So moving on, the Maynard and Weems fight, Herb Dean pretty much let Maynard pound on Weems' head for about a minute before he actually ended up stopping the fight, which I thought was interesting. And the replay, they showed Weems saying, "I'm good." You know, Pulver saying, "Tell him that you're good," and he says, "I'm good." And so he let Maynard continue to pound on the back of his head, which, you know, you can see the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, it's a little bit disconcerting. Just a little bit. Anyway, second fight, Matt Wyman and Marlon Sims. Mildly attractive Matt Wyman, formerly known as Handsome Matt Wyman when he took on Spencer Fisher in the UFC, which is actually a really entertaining fight if you missed that one. Undercard fight a little while ago at UFC 60, if I'm not mistaken, on the same card as Hughes Gracie. Spencer Fisher, of course, getting the victory with a flying knee, but really entertaining round and a half from those two. So Wyman ended up flooring the indestructible Marlon Sims, self-proclaimed indestructible Marlon Sims, with an overhand right. But it looked like the one punch that he did take from Sims was enough to give him a black eye. But hey, black eye and a win is better than no black eye and a loss. So Wyman moves on, and Maynard moves on to the semifinals. And I think we've got a pretty good lineup. We've got Joe Lozon in there. We've got a couple of solid guys. And this is really where we should be seeing some better fights. Manny, Kara Parisian's cousin. We've got Nate Diaz. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of these next little fights here. Of course, Gabe Rudiger on MMA Torch, on his blog that he does for us, mentioned that he would like a piece of Matt Wyman, which should be a surprise to nobody who saw the first few episodes. Rudiger obviously had a bone to pick with him. We don't know what that bone was, but hey, what are you going to do, right? So it'll be interesting to see if Wyman does not go to the finals, if he actually will get matched up with Rudiger. I think that would be probably the wise thing to do. Couldn't hurt anything anyway. Rudiger's a solid fighter. I'm looking forward to seeing him again. Hopefully on the finale. I believe that's the last word that we had, was that he actually would be fighting on the finale. So we'll see who he's matched up with. Let's move on to some other things. Upcoming up here on the Torch, I will be interviewing managing editor of the SweetScience.com. That's a boxing website, Michael Woods. We'll be doing a text format interview where I'll be asking him about the differences between the inner workings of boxing and mixed martial arts and what MMA can learn from the world of boxing. And so that should be an interesting interview. If you have questions that you want me to ask him, go ahead and send them my way. I'll be more than happy to pass them on, but that's going to be something that we're working on here, that I'm working on in the next couple of weeks or so, amid the hype for UFC 71. We've got a couple of things coming up, a few events, just a few. Let's go ahead and run them down. This weekend, I'm just going to go over the major events. We've got a ton of lower-tier events that are happening as well, but we're just going to hit the big guys for the most part. We've got the IFL card tomorrow in Chicago. Razor Claws versus Condors and Red Bears versus Silverbacks. As I said in this week's column, I don't know a whole lot about how the IFL works. I just know that they kind of show random fights on the Battleground show, which is the only one that I receive on my cable network. On my network TV, I should say. Also this weekend, we have Gracie Fighting Championships on pay-per-view, and this brings me to an interesting point. You've got these lower-tier promotions, you know, Gracie Fighting Championships. Gracie, of course, has some name value with the hardcore MMA fans, the guys that have been around for a while, or even, you know, some of the newer guys that have done their research and know who the Gracies are. But at the same time, you know, you don't have Gracies fighting on this card. It's just, you know, you had Jeff Monson on there. He pulled out. What's left to pay for? You know, you got Thomas Denny, who has been on some cards. And you've got Brandon Lee Hinkle, you know, nobody of a big name value who would really be selling this card. And they've got it on pay-per-view. And I just don't see the advantage of that. Because you're not going to get a big buy rate on the pay-per-view. And, you know, I'll confess, I don't know the logistics of getting an event on pay-per-view, what the fees are and what have you. But it seems to me that it would be more advantageous to go to a smaller network like a Bodog did. Maybe, you know, check out Ion, check out My Network TV, guys that are familiar with the sport and maybe would be interested in showing an event and get your name out there. You know, Cage Rage did it. Cage Rage hasn't been on the pay-per-view in the U.S., and they showed their last event on Ion and co-promoted it with Bodog. So, I mean, to me, that's a smarter move than just throwing something on pay-per-view and expecting to get a few buys out of it. But moving on, we've got Gladiator Challenge, excuse me, with the four-man lightweight tournament this weekend on the 20th, being Sunday. We've got next week, of course, UFC 71, Liddell versus Jackson. We'll have a big preview show. We've got a big preview show in the works for the podcast next week. If everything goes according to plan, at the very least, we'll have a few print previews up on the site. And, of course, we've got the prediction competition and the betting competition run by Randy Rouse. And I'm not going to talk too much about UFC 71 because we've got so much coming up about that. But let's keep on going here. We've got TKO 29 up in Canada. They're going to have Patrick Cote on the card, and they're also going to have Jonathan Goulet on the card. You know, a couple of guys with medium name value, and TKO it's got some brand name recognition up in Canada. Good promotion. Then you've got also on June 1st, your next IFL event, Wolfpack versus Sabres and Anacondas versus Tiger Sharks. This is on June 1st. June 2nd, you've got the K1 card in the 93,000-seat arena of the L.A. Coliseum with, of course, Brock Lesnar's MMA debut against Hongman Choi. You've got Hoist Gracie versus Kazushi Sakuraba. The second fight, you've got the marvelous Melvin Manhoff. That's his quotation, not mine. Although Manhoff is a fighter to watch, taking on Don Sik Yoon, who has yet to win an MMA bout. Could see some fireworks in that one. Marvin Eastman will be on the card. You've got Johnny Morton on the card, making his debut. So there's a few things going on there. Not enough to fill up a 93,000-seat Coliseum. You may see, I would be shocked if there were more than 20,000, honestly. I know there's a big Korean population. They're wanting to sell that with Hongman Choi. I just don't see it happening, but it is intriguing. I gotta say that it is intriguing to see what will happen with that K1 card on the 2nd. Then we've got the WEC on the 3rd, which is a Saturday. Looks like a really solid card, actually. It's the cable debut for the WEC on the Versus Network, and I got a request from Matt Pelkey, Torch columnist, to talk a little bit about this card. You know, And what he said was that it seems to be a UFC pay-per-view caliber event with just the lighter weights. And I really agree with that. We've got Carlos Condit and Brock Larson, which has potential to be a really good fight. Condit, of course, being the champion, and Larson, UFC veteran, losing only one fight to John Fitch. He's 20-1 overall. And, of course, Condit has a pretty impressive resume with 20-4. We've got Uriah Faber defending his featherweight belt against Chance Ferrar. We've got John Alessio on the card. We've got Alex Karalexis on the card, who went on a tear after his stint on The Ultimate Fighter. We've got Mark Hominick on the card, who came into the UFC and demolished Eve Edwards, and then ended up beating, I believe, George Gurgel, if I'm not mistaken. But Hominick is a very impressive guy. He fought at lightweight in the UFC. He's actually a natural 145 guy. He'll be fighting at featherweight in the WEC. But I think the WEC is a really exciting minor league promotion. I mean, you know, you can't really call it the big guys because it's essentially, regardless of what you hear from Dana White, I mean, it's really got to be a feeder league for the UFC. You know, they've got Joe Riggs, who was scheduled to fight down there and didn't end up doing it. Because of a lot of things, but it's possible that he'll be back down there. You know, guys that aren't necessarily in the title hunt right now, but could be. You know, I can see Brock Larson with a few more big victories under his belt, Carlos Condit even coming up and making some noise in the welterweight division in the UFC. But for now, they've got him fighting for a title, you know, a lesser title on the WEC, and that's where they can make their name before they bring him up into the UFC. Now, you could say it is the major leagues for the lighter weights, being the featherweights and the bantamweights, which you don't have in the UFC, namely with Uriah Faber, guys like Uriah Faber and Mark Hominick, who are very, you know, really solid fighters. Cub Swanson's another guy, a featherweight. Cub Swanson, 10-1, had a few fights in the King of the Cage promotion in the Gladiator Challenge, if I'm not mistaken. The guys that, you know, have been making a lot of noise, but more on the underground scene, or at least the lesser-known scene, you know, the hardcores know about them, but not a lot of casual fans know about these guys. So it'll be very interesting to see them on live TV. I'm excited to see them live. I've never seen these guys fight live before, other than, of course, Alessio, Hominick, and Larson, and Karalexis. But it'll be definitely interesting to see them get on TV. I'm really excited for it. I'm excited to have the WEC on TV so that we can finally see these guys that have supposedly been putting on really good cards. They've had two or three cards since Ziffa bought the WEC, and they've all gotten really good reviews. They're going to have a highlight show on Versus before they air this this event on the 3rd. I believe, and I'm going to have to look this up, but I think they're starting the highlight show at 8 o'clock. I'm going to look it up right now, actually. Edit. On the 3rd, the WEC is actually also going to have a highlight show starting at 8 o'clock that will go an hour until about 9 o'clock when the live event will start, and that will run from 9 to 11 on Versus. So you're going to have about 3 hours of programming there, and they've also got some other highlight shows coming up. They've got certainly enough fights to pull from with their two or three events before this live card is happening. And they're also going to have another live card in August and another one in September. So it's another intriguing time for I don't want to say fledgling promotion because they've got some big-time backers, but at least a lesser-known promotion on a lesser-known network to get some exposure. So moving on, we have got on June 9th, WFC Rumble in the Red Rocks. We've got Dan Severn, the ageless Dan Severn, on the card. Seems to me he's on every card still. Guy's pushing 50, still, you know, knocking out these lower tier guys. And the MMA debut of Tommy Morrison. You may remember Tommy Morrison as Tommy Gunn from the Rocky V movie. Tested positive for HIV a while back as a professional boxer. Actually had a lot of potential as a boxer, but the HIV test really threw his career off track. Hasn't fought in quite some time, but is going to come back as a heavyweight and fight in MMA. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. It was a guy, he had a lot of power, a lot of knockouts, over 40, if I'm not mistaken. And that's just off the top of my head, so excuse me if I'm messing that up. But Morrison is a strong guy. You know, he's not a guy that a lot of people take seriously, but it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens with him. Then we've got, on June 12th, the second UFC card within a month, UFC Fight Night 10 on Spike TV with Spencer Fisher versus Sam Stout. We've got John Fitch on the main card against the legendary Rowan Carnero, who took out Rich Clemente at the last fight night. We've got Drew McFedries, always exciting, versus Jordan Redev, making his UFC debut. Jason Black against Thiago Tavares. Jason Black is a guy who was making a lot of noise a little while ago, was undefeated for quite some time before he lost via injury to Shoney Carter. And then I know he lost in Pride. I can't remember whether it was Shinya Aoki or another guy that submitted him, but lost in pretty devastating fashion in Pride in his debut. But still a very solid guy, so it'll be another interesting fight on the preliminary card with Thiago Tavares, who is 12-0. Moving on, we've got Luigi Fioravanti, who is always exciting, versus Forrest Pettz. We've got Tamden McCrory versus Pete Spratt. Jeff Cox versus Gleison Thibault. Steve Bruno versus Chad Reiner. Luke Claudio versus Nate Moore. So we've got some potential on that card. Not a lot of name fighters, but a few guys that could potentially put together some pretty exciting fights. And that's on the 12th of June. And, of course, later that week, we have the IFL season finals, or I guess the final event of the season. I'm not going to pretend to know how the IFL works again, but that's okay. We've got the Pitbulls versus the Dragons, Lions versus the Scorpions on that card. And I guess after that, they must have the playoffs, I'm assuming. So moving on, that was the 16th. On the 22nd, and I believe I just, yeah, on the 22nd, we've got the Strike Force card when they team up with Elite XC with Phil Baroni versus Frank Shamrock, the self-proclaimed greatest fighter of all time, which remains to be seen. But this should be an interesting fight, actually, to see, you know, will Shamrock take it to the ground? Will he stand and slug with Baroni just to prove a point? Who knows? But it sure could be a barn burner. I'll be excited to see that one. And on the card, we've also got Paul Buentello, who was always entertaining as well. Ninja Hua versus Joey Villasenor. Villasenor, I always forget how to pronounce his name. So my apologies to Joey. Paul Daly versus Bang Ludwig, who I always enjoy watching. Tony Fricklin versus Kung Lee. Kung Lee probably taking on his toughest challenge in his four-fight career. It will be four fights after this. After he beat Jason Von Flew, Tony Fricklin, maybe a little bit tougher than Von Flew, but we'll see. Remains to be seen. Charles Bennett, Crazy Horse, who is always unpredictable. We've got Josh Thompson rumored to be on the card. Mike Pyle, Eugene Jackson, Nam Phan, all sorts of guys. So it actually, you know, it's a pretty solid card for an event without the letters UFC in it. Pretty solid card with some name recognition. I should say there's a lot of solid cards with that aren't UFC. I should say a lot of guys with name recognition for a card that's not UFC. So that could be a good one. And then, of course, the next day we have the Ultimate Fighter 5 finale on June 23rd with Penn versus Pulver, which, of course, holds the intrigue because those two genuinely do not like each other. And as of now, I've got my list here. We've got Nate Diaz, Manny Gamburian, Corey Hill, Joe Lozon, Brandon Melendez, Cole Miller, Gray Maynard, Matt Wyman in the quarterfinals. And we will see how that pans out. And, of course, I ended up skipping over UFC 72, which is on the 16th. Just so many UFC cards, I can't keep them straight. This will be the fourth within 1 month. You've got UFC 71, the fight night, then UFC 72 and the Tough 5 finale. Just a huge month for the UFC. But anyway, on 72, we'll talk about this, of course, in more detail later on. We've got Franklin Okami, Griffin Ramirez, Jason McDonald and Roy Singer, Tyson Griffin versus Clay Guida, which is, I don't see how that won't be the fight of the night, but we'll see how that goes. And of course, we've got Marcus Davis, who, according to UFCJunkie.com, was forced to change his name from the Irish Hand Grenade to the Celtic Warrior, being that this card is taking place in Belfast. And the Irish Hand Grenade, interestingly enough, would translate into something similar to the Taliban Bomber, according to UFC Junkie. So interesting turn of events there, which Marcus Davis having to change his name. I think that's one of the better nicknames in MMA, the Irish Hand Grenade, but hey, I don't have to translate it, I guess. But we've also got Eddie Sanchez making his return since his loss to Crow Cop. We've got Ed Herman and Scott Smith, which could be another barn burner, but we will move on from there. After this, we have, or I should say, after the UFC, the Tough 5 finale, we've got CFFC, Cage Fury Fighting Championships, which will have Merciless Ray Mercer, who of course was the pro boxer, versus Kimbo Slice, the immortal Kimbo Slice, the Street Fighter, who was actually mentioned on Pardon the Interruption today by Dan Le Batard, which was just mind-boggling to me. Let's see, they were doing mail time, if I remember correctly. If you've ever seen the show, they answer emails from viewers and call it mail time. They're doing mail time, and someone asked who would win in a fight between Roger Clemens and Yankees pitcher Farnsworth. And Le Batard was saying, forget this, I want to see some pride. Give me some pride fighting, and let me see Kimbo. I don't know how he knows about Kimbo, but hey, he's from Florida. I think Kimbo is a Florida guy. So, anyway, that's another subject altogether. But if we look at this card, in addition to this matchup of epic proportions, Mercer versus Kimbo, we've got Josh Neer is on the card, and also Nick Serra, brother of Matt Serra, on the card. So a little bit of intrigue there. We'll see how that turns out. June 30th, we got the Art of War 3 with Jeff Monson taking on Pedro Hizo, Jeremy Horn against George Santiago, Jake Shields and Carlo Prater, Ron Waterman and Mario Rinaldi, Marcio Cruz and Rico Rodriguez, Hector Munoz and Cristiano Marcelo, Damian Stelly versus Lewis Arthur Kane, which is actually looks to be a pretty decent card. Just a matter of how one would be able to see it. Speaking of not being able to see things, hopefully Pro Elite will be streaming Icon Sports event on June 30th, again, as they did the last Icon event, where we have Robbie Lawler defending his middleweight title for the first time, or I should say for the first time in his latest reign, against Kala Koloa. And I'm not even going to try because I'm just going to mess it up with the accents. The last name looks like Hose, but it's obviously not Hose. So I'm not going to call a guy Kala Hose. I'm not sure what the name is. And then we've got we've got Renato Verissimo rumored for the card, and a few other guys as well. So that is your rundown of the next month and a half, which is just a mammoth amount of fights, just ridiculous. Let's go over a few random things. We've got Jeff Joslin, who was scheduled to fight at UFC 73 on the stacked card, is out with an injury. Drew Fickett replacing him against Chris Lytle. Should still be a pretty good fight. You know, Lytle has the tendency to make guys look bad. Fickett is a solid fighter. Has wins over two of the three Joshes, with Josh Koscheck and Josh Neer. Lost to Josh Berkman, but went 2-1 against the Joshes in the UFC. Now we'll be fighting Chris Lytle. Chris Lieben mentioned in an interview that he would be considering going to the Icon promotion after his UFC contract is out, if the UFC does not bring the money, which is interesting. You know, good to know that there's competition for these guys out there to get paid more, because you always want to have that. We've got Evan Tanner, according to his website, middleweight Evan Tanner, former middleweight champion, on the comeback trail, said he's sold all of his possessions and he is back in training. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Evan. Always an interesting guy, and a good fighter. So hopefully that works out for him. Wish him all the best. Kurt Angle, according to Dana White, Dana did an interview at the Daily Star in Britain and said he had a conference call with Kurt Angle where he would talk to him about fighting. And, you know, I don't know what to think about Angle in MMA anymore, as far as whether it's actually going to happen. You know, you hear different things from Kurt and from Dana White. And really, as I said, I believe I said this last week with Jerry, you can't really listen to Dana White. You know, nice guy and everything, but Dana doesn't necessarily always see it as important to tell the truth with the media anyway, and nor should he, really. I mean, he has no obligation to. When you keep people guessing, it keeps them talking, so it's a smart move on his part. But so Kurt Angle, you know, maybe he'll make his debut, maybe he'll fight MMA, maybe he won't. Honestly, it would probably be pretty inconsequential unless they put him up against a bunch of tomato cans for a little while, and then gave him a big money fight, which he would probably lose. But that's okay. We'll see how it works out. It'll be interesting. Other news, we've got Eric Schaefer is out of his fight with Sean Salmon at, was that UFC 71 or 72? I believe it was 71, if I'm not mistaken. Eric Schaefer pulling out of the fight due to injury. Yes, UFC 71. Eric Schaefer pulling out of the fight due to injury, or due to sickness, sickness or injury, something. Anyway, guy's not doing real well. So Alan Belcher is stepping up. Alan Belcher, of course, is a middleweight fighter who most recently lost to Caleb Starnes at UFC 69 via Darce choke. And Alan is he's a charismatic guy, and you know he earned some brownie points coming up a weight class to fight on short notice against Sean Salmon. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. I'm a fan of Belcher, so I'll be interested to see that. What else do we have on the news wire here? We've got, Matt Serra and George St. Pierre, war of the words, getting nasty. St. Pierre, of course, claiming on a Canadian radio station that he was injured going into the fight, should not have fought. If he was fighting Matt Hughes, no way he would have fought. But he's thinking to himself, come on, it's Matt Serra, I can beat this guy pretty easily. And this is, of course, after St. Pierre was very gracious in defeat at the event at UFC 69. So Matt Serra, as you might have guessed, did not take that so well, and sounded off against St. Pierre, calling him a pathetic liar. And, you know, it always adds intrigue to things to get this war of the words going on. But, you know, it sells tickets. Let's be honest. I mean, you've got, that's the whole reason we've got Sarah and Matt Hughes as coaches on Ultimate Fighter 6. You know, it's the whole reason we're going to be waiting for who knows how long, I guess till October at least, to see the next welterweight title defense from Matt Sarah. Because those two have a beef. You know, that's just how it goes. And we've just got a few more things on the docket here. First off, the long-talked-about MMA movie now has a title, Red Belt, and has an actor with some name recognition in Tim Allen, and a director/screenwriter, David Mamet, who has done quite a few things. Also writes has a producer credit on The Unit. Or he's the creator of the show, I should say, and wrote a few episodes. So that's interesting. I'll tell you, I am not that excited about seeing an MMA movie starring Tim Allen. I gotta tell you, not very excited about it. I'm not very excited about seeing any movie starring Tim Allen. And I think it might take a little bit of credibility from the movie that he's in there. I mean, you know, he's doing a lot of slapstick over the last little while. Can't remember the last time I saw him in a mainstream movie. If I'm out of line, feel free to tell me, but I can't imagine. MMA movie and Tim Allen just don't mesh in my mind. Of course, Randy Couture also rumored to make an appearance in the show, or in the movie, rather. Couture actually was in The Unit this past week, had a guest appearance in The Unit, had one line, delivered it very well, as far as all that goes. Maybe the natural is a natural at more than one thing. Maybe he's natural at acting, too. We will see. In other comeback news, up at MMAweekly.com, we've got a story on Brandon Vera, the much-talked-about Brandon Vera, who is reportedly back with the UFC after separating with his camp, City Boxing. They had a whole fallout over contract negotiations with the UFC. And I believe Vera has actually signed a multi-fight deal with the UFC, extending his contract with them. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here, who he fights. You know, he never shies away from saying he wants to fight the big guys, so let's see what he does. I mean, it'll be... I'm excited to see him back. I want to see who he fights, whether, you know, he always talks about how he wants to fight Chuck Liddell, and, you know, I don't know whether he wants Liddell to move up to heavyweight or whether he wants to drop to 205. He's certainly capable of dropping to 205 if he wanted to do that, but we'll have to see. Interesting time. And finally, for the final time, I'll be mentioning Mike Freeman again on this podcast. This is the last time you will hear that name on the podcast, I promise. At least last time you'll hear me bring it up. Mike Freeman, of course, posting his mailbag this past week, or I guess it was a little while ago on the 4th, but kind of flew under the radar for a little while. Matt Pelkey actually posted a blog about it this week. You know, the guy writes an inflammatory column about MMA, knowing that the MMA hardcores are going to give him a bunch of email. You know, it is a shame that he gets these racist comments and, you know, personal shots and all that. But, you know, what percentage of emails did he print here? You know, 0.5%? He had to have gotten a ton of these emails and a ton of... You saw on the message board on CBS Sportsline how many messages were on that column. And he prints these and says, oh, yeah, see how stupid MMA fans are? It's just ridiculous. You know, he says he did it on purpose in order to get this mail to show how stupid MMA fans are, because, you know, why? I don't know. And personally, I don't buy it. I think he was uninformed, wrote a bad column, and now is trying to play it off as something that he did on purpose, you know, to get this kind of response. Of course, if you insult something that someone is passionate about, if that person is, you know, tactless and not that bright, he's going to send you a response like that. And you know, Freeman knows this. So it just bothers me. I don't buy it that it was on purpose. And I just completely disregard anything else he has to say, really. Don't want to hear about it. So that's all I have to say about Mike Freeman. No longer to be mentioned in this space again. So, to sum up, big month for the UFC coming up. We've got the quarterfinals of Ultimate Fighter coming this way as well. IFL is going to be finishing up their season, headed into the playoffs, fight-offs, whatever you want to call them. And I believe that's about it for this week. Once again, I am Sean Ennis. Please visit the site and come into the forums. Let us know what you think about the site. Let me know what you think about the podcast. Any suggestions, you know, send your questions to me. I'll answer them online, on the air. By all means, next week we are looking to have a UFC 71 preview. And after the event, we're planning on having a UFC 71 roundtable reactions after the show. So stay tuned for all that. For MMA Torch, this is Sean Ennis, signing off.
All right, thanks, Sean. This is MMA Torch editor Wade Keller, and I'm back with a transition into the excerpt of last weekend's PWTorch.com VIP audio show, the Bruce Mitchell audio update. Every weekend, I host that audio show with Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell, who's been a Torch columnist since 1990, and he has also covered UFC since its beginning, attended three or four UFC events in person, and I believe a couple other non-UFC MMA events over the years, and written about it in PW Torch over the years before our coverage split into two separate publications or two separate entities. But we do talk about MMA periodically. He is a follower of the industry with some strong opinions on it, and this discussion centers around the Oscar De La Hoya-Floyd Mayweather fight from a week or a couple weeks ago, and the implications, or I should say the ramifications, of the buy rate and how strong it did in terms of the number of buys, and just kind of some business discussion on how that impacts and reflects on the emerging MMA sport. So the conversation goes in a few different directions, but it's all centered around UFC. So we will go to that now as a special bonus for this week's MMA Torch Podcast, episode number 3, for Saturday, May 19th. Thanks so much for joining us, and don't forget, be back next weekend for our big UFC pay-per-view coverage. Bruce, big boxing news this last week, and the buy rate comes in a lot quicker than it does for wrestling. Not quite sure why on that, but came pretty close to doubling WrestleMania's overall buy rate. What lessons do you take from that, from the boxing? I admit I don't follow boxing all that closely, and I probably should have followed this more closely because of the lessons we learned in terms of everything I say about UFC and how it relates to wrestling. But I think you follow the situation a little closer than I did. What lessons did we learn from this buy rate, and how it fits into the whole pro wrestling and MMA pay-per-view atmosphere?
Well, I mean, I think part of it's simple, and you know, I kind of grew up a boxing fan before I was a wrestling fan, and there was a lot of great boxers in the 70s when I was kind of growing into being a teenager, you know, with Ali and Ken Norton and George Foreman and names that people recognize even today, Joe Frazier and all that. And then I've lost track of boxing. Part of it is I spend so much time watching, you know, watching wrestling, but basically it's since Mike Tyson, there's been, you know, very few stars, and one of the stars is Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
And so what I'm getting to is stars sell. And when you get one star, when you get dream matches between two stars that people have been able to anticipate for a good long while, you've got the best, you know, the guy that Floyd Mayweather people think is the best fighter in the world. You got Oscar De La Hoya, who's the biggest star, and you know, this is just a huge star in the Hispanic community, and you know, really handsome and can fight. Then all of a sudden, boxing finally had this huge attractive matchup.
Finally,
and it cut through all those brands, all those titles with all those initials that nobody could possibly keep up with. And that relates right to pro wrestling. That relates right to MMA. What sells is big charismatic stars in intriguing fights.
But I would argue that when you have weekly television like pro wrestling, you can make a title mean something more than boxing can, and you can control and make sure that the title has credibility. And, well, I am in no way saying stars aren't the most important thing, because they are, and that's proven. You do need to keep an eye on titles and not say it's entirely a star-driven business. I think you have to take into account the differences between a weekly episodic pro wrestling industry and boxing, which relies on the stars, because you're right, the titles are convoluted and they don't have really an opportunity to get people hooked on them on a week-to-week basis.
You know, I mean, one of the things that was really interesting about that fight, you know, and the fight was kind of a dud, but I think if they rematch it, there's going to be a ton of money in it. And it's not even that the fight was kind of a dud. It's just going to be, again, that thing. But, you know, titles get over stars. And they've kind of lost that. And in boxing, I know when I was growing up, the deal was you had to beat the champion.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you had to not just have a draw or just barely perform better, you know, win on just a couple of points. You had to go in there and dominate the champion. Or the judges wouldn't give you that title. And the titles have now, even in boxing, have gone where they don't mean so much, where, you know, De La Hoya got outpointed, and they just turned, and he talked about it, you know, they turned around and gave the fight to Mayweather. And it's just, you know, that's, you know, I'm sorry, Mayweather. I don't want to say Mayweather, but, you know, Mayweather. And that's, you know, that's kind of important. But titles can, if you have discipline with your titles, they can make the wrestler, they can make the fighter, and that's kind of where it, you know, that's where it is. And this thing, you know, captured the people's imaginations, and that's what you're trying, you know, that's what you're trying to do. And I think that's where it does really, you know, there are lessons to be learned from it, and everything. But you're exactly right. I've always thought that wrestling should be able to do a better job, because better job than MMA, better job than boxing, because you really can control to a greater extent. There's still injuries, there's still plans not going the way you thought they would and all that, but you know, you can control where you want everything to go, and you can give exciting, you know, you can give some excitement, you know, you can plan it, and that's a big advantage. It doesn't always work out that way because, you know, for all the political reasons, all the reasons, all the things that we talk about every week, you know, and write about every week. But it's you know, and that's, I mean, that's a huge, you know, it did double WrestleMania, and WrestleMania was a great, you know, was a great success.
Yeah,
it doesn't, you know, I guess boxing gets the bragging rights, but it really doesn't, you know, it really doesn't matter. And then, you know, again, you look at boxing, you go, okay, you know, what's the next big matchup? And there is no next. The next big matchup is perhaps a rematch.
Yeah,
these two guys are both ready. You know, both claim they're ready to retire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not, you know, that you've got to have. You've got to constantly be building guys to climb up the ladder, and that's a lesson too. For, you know, that's not a lesson. Pro wrestling knows that.
Yeah. Is it an embarrassment, or does it, I guess, take the bloom off a little bit of WrestleMania success, or is this just, it's an anomaly for boxing, it's not a big deal, and WWE has every reason to be proud of how well WrestleMania's buy rate turned out?
I think it's a big deal, but I think WWE has every right to be proud of how WrestleMania's buy rate turned out, and I think just because something was that huge happened to come along within a month after years and years of, you know, nothing, you know, Holyfield maybe coming along and you know, and really nobody since Tyson coming along doing, De La Hoya has been real successful, but it's not, it doesn't mean that WrestleMania wasn't a huge deal. It doesn't mean that, doesn't mean that they should be, you know, there's nothing that, and they're not competitive, I mean, they're competitive for those dollars, but they're not competitive for talent, not competitive for television shows or any of that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I think they should bank their money. Both sides should bank their money and be happy that they did real well.
Yeah.
Proud of themselves. I don't see where this puts a black eye on WWE at all. I mean, and really, you know, really the big cultural battle is MMA and boxing. It's not WWE. It's not WWE and boxing.
Let's do a slight sidebar from that, because it is worth talking about. What does this big boxing buy rate mean to UFC? Is it good or bad news for them, or neither?
I thought it was good. I thought it was good news for UFC because the question wasn't dodged by anybody about what's happened to boxing, because boxing had this, you know, it refocused on boxing. You know, this dream matchup made everybody kind of look and go, well, we haven't had a dream matchup where all the, you know, where Jack Nicholson and you know, every, you know, Jack Nicholson is the premier, you know, template, you know, not template, what am I trying to say, linchpin or something. You know, when you see him there, you know it's a big sporting deal, unless it's the Lakers, you know, unless it's the Lakers home game or something.
Yeah.
And you know it's a big deal, and we didn't see all these guys at stuff until now. And then, so when was the last matchup? And so they're talking about, well, what happened to boxing? And MMA and UFC got brought up all the time, and it wasn't in that derogatory, you know, human cockfight cliche, or, you know, there are people that were, you know, there were some writers that were, never wrote about it, that didn't understand, you know, didn't know about it, who had their prejudices and all that. But most of, you know, from what Jim Lampley said, I mean, they're talking about is the new, you know, is mixed martial arts taking over from boxing after boxing being, you know, boxing was one of the major sports, top two or three in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Right there with baseball and ahead of football and ahead of, you know, the Joe Louis fights, the Muhammad Ali fights, that counted more than anything in our culture. And now, you know, now it's come to this point where it seemed to be faded away. So, but having these big media, you know, mainstream media people talking about it all over the place, what's, you know, and grappling with it, as it were, I think that helped UFC. I mean, it said that it's something to be taken seriously. Even the ones that didn't like it took it, for the most part, you know, took it seriously. And I don't know that they understand, I don't know that they know that the product, the MMA product, is so saturated. It's going to be really interesting to see. Boxing comes back with another Mayweather De La Hoya fight, or gets another real attractive fight in some way, and MMA takes a hit because the market is just too jammed with product, then it might be that mainstream media looks at it and goes, oh, it was a fad, and never takes it as, you know, never, because the next step for MMA is going to be covered day to day, week to week as a legitimate sport in, you know, in Sports Illustrated and on ESPN.
Yeah.
And everywhere else that, you know, everywhere else that, that covers sports, you know, that covers the mainstream sports from day to day. And they're not there yet. And so, it's going to be real interesting next year, and I don't know, next year or 2 years, to see how this all plays out. And I don't know where it plays out. I would have thought MMA was going to make that cultural shift. But now when I turn my television on and there's, you know, it's like you can watch it every night of the week, and UFC has too much product on it. You know, and UFC has free, you know, when UFC has free, when it has a free pay-per-view, 3 days later has a pay-per-view you have to buy, that's just, I don't care what sport, what entertainment you are, that's way too much. And right now they're riding that high, but does it burn the product out faster?
Yeah, I'm not as convinced of that, because I think that there are so many fighters out there, and every single fight in MMA, especially, you know, if you like the rules and the presentation, it's professional, you're familiar with the rules, and you think that this fight could be my first chance to see someone who's going to be see him on TV, and they're going to be on pay-per-view in 6 months or a year and a half fighting for a title. I can watch UFC anytime, and whether it's a best of from past big matches, especially if you're a new viewer catching up, or you're an old viewer wanting to relive a big fight, or you just want to see contenders who might end up emerging, I don't see a problem having it on as often as they do, because people who watch it every night are going to watch it every night by choice, but people who don't want to watch it that often, they're going to bump into it where they have an opportunity to watch it once every week or two, or once or twice a week. So I'm just not as sold on the burnout factor as you are. I mean, I'm not saying your opinion's crazy, but I'm not sold that it's as much of a drawback as you've talked about.
Well, I mean, you know, and again, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
And I think that what'll happen, you know, you would think that some of these companies that, you know, when I watch Bodog, and they can't even tell you when, you know, and they can't even tell you when the pay-per-view is, or how am I supposed to order it, or what's TV special, what channel it's on, or anything like that in their commercials, but they're backed by these zillionaires who don't seem to care, and it's a vanity thing. If it was the market taking care of itself, you know, it was just capitalism, then some would rise and some would fall, and then you could take a look at it. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think that there's going to be room for a set amount of companies, and then the other companies are going to fall out. But is the mainstream media going to look at it like the natural, you know, the natural setting of people getting really excited about a new sport, and then the market forces taking over? Are they going to think, oh, it was a fad, and, you know, these other companies went out of business, I don't have to pay attention? You know, they're looking for an excuse not to pay attention to it. I don't have to pay attention to it. So,
you know what, though? I think that...
It'll be interesting, but if people are just watching, I would argue that there's too much UFC product on right now. But, I mean, if people are not watching these other companies and are looking at it like UFC is the NFL of the sport, then you could very well be right. And I'm not sold on this. I'm just like, okay, what happens as we go? And that's something that, you know, I think.
You know what? This is the other thing. I'm a believer that UFC is a compelling enough product, as is pro wrestling, when it's done well, that it's going to, at this point, survive. And now the only question is it going to be one of the top three or four sports in the country and overtake boxing, which is fun if you're a UFC fan, you can take pride in that, or is it going to be a fifth, sixth, seventh ranked sport and still have a lot of viewers, still draw well on pay-per-view, and the top fighters are going to become millionaires or close to it? Well, okay, that's fine too. You know, I mean, if ESPN or Sports Illustrated decide that they don't want to cover UFC, big deal. You can still watch UFC. You're going to be able to watch it once a month on pay-per-view and probably on television in some form. What's wrong with that? That's fine. I don't think you have to be obsessed with becoming.
No, I'm not. They can be successful. And yeah, I agree with that. I'm talking about as it culturally grows or not. You know, you're right. They can be successful either way. And one of the things I think that I see when I watch Ultimate Fighter, when I watch UFC, is that they have an advantage of over boxing, and boxing uses somewhat on HBO with that 24/7 show, but they have an advantage over boxing and mainstream sports is, you know, the NFL, those reporters go out and they find their own stories. And yes, you know, the political part of it is they don't want to piss off the home team too much or the NFL hierarchy too much, and they get pointed in the right directions. There's a pack mentality and all that. But UFC right now gets the best of both worlds in that they get some general mainstream exposure, but they're able to control their storylines in a lot of ways. Except for the part about what really happens in the ring, they're able to market their guys exactly. They were able to market Randy Couture exactly the way they want to market Randy Couture. Instead of having a day-to-day independent MMA sports writer go in and write the story however he sees fit, they're able to frame their fighters on television exactly to their best advantage, and that's a big and frame those stories. I mean, the stories are based in reality, but they still can leave out something or put in something or hide something to make their stories more exciting than, say, John, the sports writer going in and just writing another story, a story about it. Yeah. You know, the stuff that happens in the NFL, between teammates and with teammates that they don't want to have happen. The NFL doesn't want out, that gets out all the time.
Yeah.
And they prefer not to. With UFC, they can let out the parts they want to let out to build up the grudge, to build the fight, and they can ignore the parts they don't want to ignore through their television. And that's where, to me, it's really it's just another form of wrestling.
Although, sadly, there's a lot more of what you just said in football.
I'm not trying to make that same point 100 times, actually, even though I do, but, I mean, that's something that they could lose if they became so mainstream they were bigger than boxing.
Absolutely, but the sad part is a lot more of that controlling the storyline happens in football and baseball and basketball among beat writers than we'd like to think. There's exceptions.
Oh, very much.
But, yeah, this isn't, yeah. All right, well, let's...
But I'm saying it, but it still has to be. There's still not that total control where you produce... Are you kidding? Don't you think the NFL would love to package and produce everything that's seen on the Minnesota Vikings in their own, on their own stuff? And you're right, they have a ton of control, but they don't have total control.
Yeah.
Like right now, UFC does over there.
Yeah.
Over how most people.
That'll wrap up that excerpt of the Bruce Mitchell audio update. If you are a pro wrestling fan and listening to this MMA Torch podcast and want to get a mega dose of pro wrestling audio, we run about 70 audio updates as part of the VIP section of PWTorch.com, and it includes around 2 hours of Bruce Mitchell every weekend discussing in-depth the history of the sport and current events in pro wrestling, and every once in a while some MMA talk, including a little bit more this week also. So if you're interested in that, check out PWTorch.com. Also, don't forget to go to MMATorch.com. New articles every day on that website, and interact with the MMA Torch staff at the new MMA Torch message boards. Just click on the MMA Torch forum link on the main page of MMATorch.com. On that note, this is MMA Torch editor Wade Keller signing off. Until next week.